The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Wednesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. Gil Alexander, Wyatt Tomchek, once again. Boy, Kelly's Wally Pippen this. You could be. You know the Wally Pippen reference, by the way? Yeah, okay. You could be Lou Gehrig. No, you're off tomorrow already. Yeah,
that's right. I mean, you know, I'll be here.
Right.
You know, we got the Big Gun Racing, first street race in NASCAR history.
And we got the Big Gun Brian Ortega coming in to produce this show. Kelly will be back on Monday. Kelly Bidlin. That's why Tom check in for Kelly Bidlin. Packed show today. Real quick before we do anything, I do have a tennis play that's about to start at the Eastbourne International in England. I am taking a crazy flyer on Harriet Dart at +292 is where I got her last night against Yelena Ostapenko. +292 and the over in games, 20.5. So if you're interested in having a tennis bet while you listen to the show today, there you go. Dart at +292, over 20.5 games, about to start if it hasn't started this very moment. So just want to get that out of the way. On the show today, packed, Dan Weston joins us to talk Wimbledon. Will Hill will be here to give us all his bets that he's making today, all his baseball thoughts and beyond. Jason Weingarten from Under a Cloud of Smoke on baseball as well, and all the wacky things he's betting. And it's football week. The guide, the NFL betting guide, comes out tomorrow. Multiple football guests. Matt Brown will be here to give us a couple division plays, a prop bet, all of his different football plays, including thoughts on the Rocket Mortgage and golf from Matt, of course. We'll get into that with him. Mike Pritchard, what he provided for the guide as well. And Drew Dinsick, who I started out football week here on a numbers game talking about alternate season win totals. Drew Dinsick articulates it better than anybody. We'll talk to him about that and some of his bets that he's made for the upcoming NFL season. We start today with Shohei. Because I've tried this year, you know, not to talk about Shohei every day. But what we're seeing from him, I just don't ever want us to take it for granted. I don't want it to be normalized. And last night, Shohei Ohtani becomes the sixth pitcher with 10 Ks and two homers in a game since the mound moved to its current distance in 1893. Since 1893, Shohei the Sixth, Zach Greinke did it once in 2019. Mad Bum, the great, 2017, he did that. He could hit some homers for the Giants, that's for sure. Rick Wise did it in 1971, and who could forget Pedro Ramos doing it in 63 and Mil Pappas doing it in 61? I know you couldn't. So that's, I mean, I could run off on some of these, and I will, because, you know, last night he walked and singled in between his two homers as a hitter, allowed only four hits and two walks as a pitcher, striking out 10, as we mentioned, while shutting the White Sox out through his first 6 1/3. He became the sixth player with 10 strikeouts, two home runs, as we mentioned, but there was also so many other things. The first player since 1900 with 10 strikeouts and three hits in multiple games in a season. He now has 5 3-hit performances in games when he's the starting pitcher. That joins Warren Spahn in 1958. George Uhle in 1923 is the only players to attain that many in a single season. And then last night, I mean, doesn't really do it justice because he had to leave the game pitching-wise because one of his nails was splitting. So everybody's all worried about him. But he's like, no, don't worry about it. I'll hit. He comes back the next inning, 4-0-7, gone. So, I mean, it's just the flair for the dramatic as well, and the Angels win over the White Sox. The Angels reaching the midway point of the season. He leads the majors in OPS, 1.039, homers 28, RBI 64, 15th in the pitching side among 65 qualified pitchers in ERA at 3.02, third most strikeouts with 127, lowest batting average against 180, 5.7 Fangraphs, wins above replacement. I mean, come on. We could spend a whole segment going through this stuff. Seriously, I have like more, but I'm going to stop there because I want to get into the betting aspect of this.
I was going to ask you, is Shohei the most dominant player for you in baseball since your favorite of all time, Barry Lamar Bonds?
Well, Barry Lamar Bonds is just the greatest hitter I'll ever lay eyes on in my entire life. But what Shohei's doing, like we used to compare it to Babe Ruth. This is beyond Babe Ruth at this point, what he's doing. And I just don't want it to be normalized at all. He is now, we woke up this morning, he was minus 700 to win the AL MVP before the game last night. He's as high as minus 1400 now to win the American League MVP. So there's that. But it does sort of give entree to the conversation about AL Cy Young, and then while we're at it, let's talk NL Cy Young as well, because I think there's some interesting betting angles on this. For American League Cy Young, it begs the question, okay, could Shohei be given that too? He's 11-1. He's the fifth shot at the for the AL Cy Young. It's Shane McClanahan's +265. Framber Valdez 3-1. Kevin Gausman's plus 450, Garrett Cole 6-1, and then Shohei at 11-1 at DraftKings. But I went through metrics that I really care about. Now, I'm going to get into what I care about and then a metric that actually is the best predictor of Cy Young's and who wins them over the last six seasons. So let's just talk what I like. So I'm an advanced stats guy. What you're seeing on the screen, if you're watching at VSiN.com or on the VSiN app, this is the ERA juxtaposed against the fielding independent and the xFIP for each pitcher, including their expected ERA, their WAR, their win-loss record, their K percentage, their ball, based on balls percentage, average against, batting average against, and their whip, walks and hits per innings pitched. So if you look at the five guys at the top of the American League Cy Young betting market, McClanahan, Valdez, Gausman, Cole, and Ohtani, and those categories that I'm interested in, who leads in the most of them? In other words, who leads in the most categories? And the answer is Framber Valdez has the best xFIP at 2.82. He has the best walk percentage at 5.4%, which is nice low. He has the best whip at 1.00. So he leads in three. The other guy who leads in three different categories is, in fact, Shohei. He has a 3.34 expected ERA, so no matter what it is now, he's expected to have the best ERA of this bunch, a 32.6% K rate, and 179 against headed into last night in terms of batting average against. So he leads in a lot of categories. They're very Nolan Ryan-esque categories. And so one wonders, is there a bet at 11-1 on Shohei? I would still argue these are human beings giving out awards. Do they really? He's fait accompli to win MVP, barring an injury. And please don't get hurt for those who have those MVP bets. Could they also give him the Cy Young if he continues to dominate on the mound as well? There's a path. But in the end, I think they're just human beings that don't want to give him both of these. So I wouldn't make the bet, even though I think there's a path in terms of the metrics that I certainly look at. National League, same sort of exercise, but National League will go, it's Gallen, Zach Gallen, Clayton Kershaw, Spencer Strider, Logan Webb, pardon me. That would be a story if it was Brandon Webb. Zach Wheeler. And then I'll add a sixth name, and I'll tell you why I'll add the sixth name in a minute. But again, if you go through those categories, ERA, fielding independent, xFIP, xERA, WAR, win-loss, K percentage, walk percentage, batting average against, and whip, the pitcher that leads in the most categories, well, it's a little more splintered, but it's actually Spencer Strider. And Spencer Strider has a 2.91 xFIP, is a 9-2 win-loss record, and a, get ready for this, 38.9% K rate, which is just sick for those of us who have had our nose in baseball stats for so many years. I just trust me when I tell you that is beyond elite. Now, some of the other categories, like batting average against and whip, he's barely out of first place. He's plus 750. So for all the people who love Zach Gallen and Clayton Kershaw and Webb and Wheeler and others, I actually think a plus 750 bet on Spencer Strider, to me, makes a lot of sense in a team that might be clearly the best team in baseball when all is said and done. They certainly look it now. So for me, the recommendation would be Spencer Strider at plus 750 for NL Cy Young. I don't really have a bet on the AL side. But the one thing I want to add to this discussion is that's great that that's what I think. But there is a gentleman by the name of Tom Tango. Among the stats I just mentioned, he invented fielding independent pitching. So he's one of the giants of baseball analytics. He has a Cy Young point system. And over the last, let me just give you sort of real quickly what he has been able to predict Cy Young-wise. In 2015, he got the top five in both leagues in the right order. In 2016, his point system correctly predicted the three finalists in both leagues. In 2017, he correctly got the AL finalists in order. So on and on, and let me just say over the last six seasons, so that's a total of 12 Cy Young awards, AL and NL, he has hit 7 out of 12. By a very simple formula, there will not be a test on this later, Wyatt, I promise you. But you know all those fancy metrics that I just talked about? Here's his formula. Innings pitched divided by this is amazing. Innings pitched divided by 2 minus earned runs plus strikeouts divided by 10 plus wins. That's it. And that apparently matches voters' opinions on who will eventually get the Cy Young better than anything. 7 out of the last 12. And again, the amazing things that he did in years past in terms of getting everybody in order. And by that system, this year you ask, well, who does he have winning it right at this moment? Well, in the American League, it is the short shot, Shane McClanahan, by his point system. And in the National League, you ready for this? It's none of the guys I mentioned. At 20-1 at DraftKings, all these numbers at DraftKings, it's Marcus Stroman of the Chicago Cubs in the National League. He has, by his formula, Marcus Stroman, and those are the stats that I talked about for Stroman on the screen now. You know, when I do mine, which are the ones that Stroman leads in? Well, by the way, he has the best ERA, conventional baseball card stat, 2.47 of all the guys mentioned in this National League Cy Young market. He has the best batting average against, 2.03, and he has the best whip of all those National League contenders at 1.08. So while I think Spencer Strider's my play at plus 750, you may be better off just saying, well, that's great, Gil, but I'm going with Tom Tango and his tried and true system. I'll take a flyer on Marcus Stroman of the Chicago Cubs at 20-1. So it's the chalk in the American League, and it is not the guy you would expect per Tom Tango in the National League Cy Young market. We used Shohei to get to that, but hopefully Shohei gets a little more love in the Cy Young market. I just don't think they're going to give him both MVP and Cy Young. It's the cynic in me. I would love if they would, but I don't think that's going to happen. But I'm going Strider at plus 750. Tom Tango right now would have you go Stroman at 20-1 in the National League. Drew Dinsick on the NFL and tennis next. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today. Won't take you but a few seconds. Then you stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account. That won't take you but a few minutes. And then you start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Skill Alexander, Wyatt Tomchek, and for the vacationing Kelly Bidlin. Well-deserved vacation for Bidlin. Has anybody checked in on him to see if he's okay, by the way? Has anybody checked in on him?
I heard he had a good weekend.
Oh, good. Okay. You know how we say, like, there's a path for this player to win this award?
Yeah.
There's a path for his vacation to have gone
badly. Do you think
badly.
Kelly has – what is the average time that Kelly's been waking up each day this week?
I'm going to say it's hard to just immediately make yourself wake up later. So not as late as you think. I'm going to say 8:25 a.m.
Okay. I was going to say, do you think he's waking up before the show starts or after
the show
starts?
No, after the show starts. Okay. But there is a path where it goes bad for him, so I just want people to check in on him. And he didn't have Keegan Bradley. You know, the whole thing could spiral. Drew Dinsick joins us now. Not one, but two podcasts under his jurisdiction. The Deep Dive podcast, which he does with Andy Molitor, and, of course, Bet the Edge at NBC Sports, which he does so adeptly as well. You can follow him on Twitter at @whale_capper. How you doing, Drew?
Doing well. Great time of year. We got a month ahead of us of Wimbledon and Tour de France. So those of us who specialize in sort of the off-brand sports really get to shine.
You bet the Tour?
Oh, yeah, of course. Tour de France, by the way, is one of the cooler experiences for those of us on the West Coast, because you wake up and, you know, the opening part of the stage, which is usually not that interesting, is kind of, you know, it's in the books, but they do have like the nice aerial shots already. And then you get to see sort of how it climaxes. And then, you know, it's sort of perfect kind of background noise as you're drinking your coffee, getting going every morning. So I absolutely love watching the Tour, and you know, it's in a pretty good spot right now. Really, I can't remember another time where you basically had a pick 'em here between the top two in the general classification pre-flop. And there's going to be a lot of uncertainty. It's going to be a ton of fun.
Who are those two human beings for the uninitiated?
Oh, so the last two champions. Last year's champion was somewhat of a surprise. It was Jonas Vingegaard.
Sure,
he's from Denmark, obviously. If you couldn't tell from the pronunciation, he is kind of burst on the scene as kind of an up and coming, high altitude mountain stage, specialist. And he's on the best team, by far the best team, like the strength of the top five riders on his team, which is Jumbo Visma, far better than the second best team, which makes things interesting because the best just flat out rider from a talent perspective is the Slovenian Tadej Pogačar, who won two straight Tour de France's before getting upset last year. And his team is much weaker. So he basically has to do it by himself. And, you know, that brings an element of uncertainty of just, you know, how the team Jumbo-Visma, you know, kind of sets up Vingegaard for the win. And, I, you know, having seen how spectacular they were last year, even with one of their key riders kind of going for points and going in the breakaways and Wout van Aert, you know, I think that's less likely this year, which means their team's probably going to be even stronger in the mountains. So I think Vingegaard is a clear bet at around pick'em prices. I think you can probably find plus 105, plus 110 out there still.
Vingegaard. The beauty of this last 3 minutes, Drew, is you could have been saying any name at what coming out of your mouth, and I would have just been like, sure, that's exactly like you could just be making all of this up. I would have no idea. Vingegaard is the bet. Is that Vingegaard spelled with a V or a W? How's that spelled? Yes.
Jonas is J-O-N-A-S.
Yes, that part we got.
And Vingegaard is V-I-N-G. E-J. Oh, sorry, V-I-N-J. Sorry, V-I-N-G. V-I-N-G-E-G-A-A-R-D.
All right. Wyatt, make sure he's not punking me.
Gil, I love you. Yeah. The tennis graphics are tough because those names are if you make me do Tour de France, I'm quit.
You're good.
I'm gone.
You're good. I want to crescendo into football, but real quick then, we talked a little Wimbledon last week. You and I are going to do hopefully a podcast on Friday on this. Any additional Wimbledon thoughts before the draw?
I mean, the women's is wide open. Very excited to see how the draw shapes the probabilities there. You've seen Rybakina and Sabalenka drift appropriately, I think.
Rybakina might not be healthy, man. So that virus is killing her.
I got to tell you, I have a specific alert set up for if she withdraws, because that's going to obviously impact the pool. Mm-hmm. I think especially if we see her get like a premier seed in a, you know, in a quarter, she's going to be a huge price in that quarter. And then if she withdraws between that, you know, getting placed and the quarter starting, then that's going to be where you want to attack for quarter prices. But I don't know if that'll work out. I think she's probably going to play, but she certainly didn't play well in her one warm-up match. And, you know, I don't think all the reports from her camp sound like whatever she's dealing with is pretty serious. And she has kind of a, you know, on the record of having, you know, had a very difficult time recovering from COVID back in 2021. Mm-hmm. So it's not really unprecedented that she is kind of, you know, at a huge disadvantage to defend her title here.
Hope she's okay, because she left the French Open. People are like, what's this? And it hasn't really subsided for her.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the nature of the tennis calendar. Mm-hmm. I mean, putting clay and grass back to back and, you know, having this compressed schedule really makes things tough if you pick up an injury or an illness. I mean, I didn't have a ton of exposure either way. So, you know, I didn't really shock me. I think now you just basically have to look at it as an opportunity to try to corner a price against her, probably.
You waiting for quarters on Kvitova and Jabeur, or have you bet them outright so far?
I have Kvitova in pocket. After we did our segment last week, some of the good friends of the show were able to help me track down 40-1 on Kvitova.
Wow.
So holding a big price there.
Her grass court numbers are the best of anyone over a year span. Like, I mean, that's how good she is on grass. And she's won this tournament twice before, it should be noted, of course. So yeah,
she should have more than two titles. If she didn't get stabbed in the arm, I think she would have dominated a couple of those intermediate years. You know, the years where Serena really wasn't in form, those were there for her taking, but she was off tour because of the injuries or because of the attack. Ans Jabeur, I mean, I hope she gets her head in the right place, but too much baggage there for me to get involved again this year. Maybe if we see her kind of really thrive and, you know, playing with confidence, I'll change my tune. But for now, I'm out on Ons. And then the rest of those prices at or near the top, I think, are all about correct. There are at least 12 women who have a realistic shot here, outside of sort of the very tippy top of the board. Players who I think need to be given consideration include Donna Vekic, Alexandrova, Kudermatova.
Kudermatova, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe Samsonova. I know she's an injury waiting to happen. I completely get that, but it's just her top level is so high. Yeah. It's tough to completely dismiss her. But yeah, ultimately, the women's look super duper wide open, and I'm very excited to see how the draw shapes the win probabilities there. And then the men's looks like monumentally chalky.
Yes, it does.
I cannot remember the last, I mean, I guess it was the Australian Open, right? Where it was just a foregone conclusion before they even took the court.
I mean, we've had a few of these along the line for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we're back to having them, in other words. Yeah.
Right. And I guess as I currently kind of look at the way that the market is shaped, I don't think there realistically is anyone outside of the top two that has more than a 2% chance to win, wow, which is insane. And if we get, you know, our 1v2, Alcaraz v. Djokovic final here, I'm probably going to be on Alcaraz at price, because again, like, there's sort of been now a complete flip flop of what was just, what, you know, two weeks ago, what the, you know, Djokovic was +200 or something like that on close, +180 maybe on close against Alcaraz on clay. And Alcaraz was, you know, so wound up for that match.
We could talk about wound up, yeah.
But, you know, we're going to have to go into detail on this more when we do the tennis podcast. Yeah, but we'll, I get the sense that there's going to be an appetite in the market for Djokovic in that particular final. And I kind of feel like the shoe's on the other foot in terms of Alcaraz would be playing with house money and the pressure would be on Djokovic. And in the back of my head, Djokovic kind of floundering in 2016, losing to Sam Querrey after he finally won his French Open and got his career slam. There's a whiff of that in the air, given that he got to 23 and he's now the all-time slam title holder for the moment, being on vacation, etc. Maybe he's not quite as dialed in as we normally expect.
Wow. Sweet Sam Querrey reference, by the way. When last I heard about Sam Querrey, he was playing pickleball. Like, I think he's trying to transition and just destroy people in pickleball. I'm serious.
Perfect environment for Sam Querrey.
Perfect. We'll come back. The NFL betting guide is out tomorrow. Drew with his thoughts on alternate season win totals, what he's bet already. Next, Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's always football season here at VSiN, which is why we're giving you our 2023 NFL guide early. Our NFL betting guide will be released tomorrow, and it'll help you get ahead of the upcoming NFL season with in-depth profiles of every team, including advanced stats, proven betting systems, and proprietary betting trends, plus best bets on season win totals, futures, and props. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today for as low as $19 and reserve your copy of the guide, or take advantage of our summer kickoff special and get access to everything we do through the Super Bowl for only $175. Sign up today at vsin.com/subscribe. Very exciting. Looking forward to that betting guide, the release of it tomorrow. Don't get left out on that. And so many contributors. Will have Mike Pritchard come in next hour and talk about what he discussed in the guide as well. Looking forward to that. Drew Dinsick, I started the week by saying, you know, listen, we're gonna have tons of opinions in the next few months, not only leading up to the guide, but in the guide and then after the guide for the next couple months. But really, the market that you should always keep in mind when betting NFL preflop is alternate season win totals. And nobody has ever articulated the joys and the benefits of NFL alternate season win totals better than this gentleman, Drew Dinsick, who is kind enough to hang with us for another segment. Drew, you came on here in the past and you really did. You articulated it great because you talked about how you don't think the pricing can be done accurately. Please, in your words, why is it that you love those markets so much?
Well, price, uncertainty, price are the two key aspects here. If you have an edge in a neutral vig win total market, you almost certainly have an edge in the alternate total win market because the long tails to the good and the bad for these teams are almost always mispriced in the alternate win total markets. Now, I will say it's tougher to get a bet down in these than it used to be. That's a qualifier. I will say that the pricing is starting to improve, I think, because people are just beating it into place a little bit and or just, you know, taking advantage of the bigger prices in these markets. And so they're changing the shape of them a little bit. But it doesn't really change my opinion that, you know, for the most part, the uncertainty around where a team finishes in terms of win total compared to what the closing price is, even if the closing price is relatively efficient, you know, the injuries and, you know, players emerging, particularly at the quarterback position, can produce some absolutely wild and unexpected outcomes that just really realistically can't be captured in sort of the long tail pricing. I think the nature of a lot of the bettors that'll specifically at a lot of these legal books is to, well, I don't want to get hooked here, so I'll pay the extra vig for a little bit of protection around what I think is some sort of a key win total. And in reality, your headspace should be exactly the opposite, which is if I think this is an edge at eight, then it is even a bigger edge at seven with, you know, a price like 2-1. And so ultimately the uncertainty around the win total that closes for any of these teams, is plus or minus, one win in either direction. Less than 50% of teams finish within one win of their closing win total, which is to say that, there will be at least 14, 16, examples this season, like every season, where a team expected to finish with eight finishes with four, expected to finish with seven finishes with 10. I mean, you don't even really need to think hard, to come up with a couple examples from last year where you had teams that were expected to be competitive, like the Colts, who were not even sniffing their win total. That was decided by mid-season. And, you know, similarly, you know, teams like the Eagles who, you know, everything came together. They were expected to win around, you know, eight and a half on the open. It got bet up aggressively, nine and a half, 10, maybe even at the close. Well, they cleared that with ease. And so, you know, going for a little bit more of a lucrative payout on these, particularly since you're locking up capital that's just going to sit there from now until January, I think is, you know, it's a wise strategy from a number of different ways you want to attack it. And, you know, I mean, I guess if you're like some sort of mega staker and you want, you know, you're locking up, you know, multiple K on a win total for an entire season, then this is not a practical strategy just because you can't really get that type of bet down very easily, in the alternate win total market. But if you're a recreational player, recreational plus type of player, then this should be the entire thesis you should be working with as you're trying to cook your, you know, your books for, you know, for a season long, you know, expectation.
They're not available everywhere yet. Have you made any alternate season win total bets yet this year?
No, I can't get down anywhere yet. I'm assuming Circa is going to come up here. I basically have early August type of trip planned to go sign up for contests and get alt win totals in at Circa. They offered them last year. I'm assuming they're going to do it again this year. I have eyes for a couple, certainly. And actually, you know, if you really want to get wild, the real name of the game was going for highest lowest wins last year. That was a ton of fun.
Care to share your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a pretty obvious lowest win look in the 10-1 range, which is pretty amazing. And it's the LA Rams, 2 years removed from the Super Bowl. This team, if you just basically compose player level ratings for who they will be starting, this is going to be one of the worst defenses we have seen take the field in like 5 years. They have two players on the defensive roster who are above replacement level. Aaron Donald, who is clearly above replacement level, and Ernest Jones, I think his name is, who is barely above replacement level. Everybody else is Everybody else taking the field for this team is either below replacement level or just a complete unknown, because there is a lot of expected sorting during, you know, during training camp, where you're going to have potentially several undrafted free agent type of quality players on the field for this defense to start week one. The offense similarly has taken some attrition here. Presumably a lot of people are kind of looking at the Rams like they have high upside because they're going to be healthier this year than they were last year. I got to tell you, even at full strength for a full season, this offense is really, really lacking. And the chances that Stafford, you know, ultimately gets shut down this season, I think, are very real, particularly if they're losing lots of football games early. Similarly for Cooper Kupp, he may be a trade piece. Honestly, if this turns into a full on rebuild, I don't think he is guaranteed to finish the season with the Rams. I don't think Aaron Donald is guaranteed to finish the season with the Rams. If Jalen Ramsey is a movable piece, so are these other guys. And I think realistically, the Rams as your team with the most losses definitely stands out. Cardinals are definitely in the mix as well. Now we've made two NFC West teams that are my bottom two power ranked teams right now, based on player, you know, personnel as it currently stands. And, the Cardinals will at least get Kyler Murray back at some point. They have slightly more talent on the defensive side of the ball than the Rams. So maybe, they win those head to heads and they are, you know, just finished just barely ahead. But, I think, realistically those two teams fighting for the number one pick next year looks like the way that the cards are breaking, the way I rate these teams.
No pun intended. Yeah. And I'll tell you, the difference a couple years makes between the NFC West then and the NFC West now. And I even said with Stafford, you know, I'm surprised in some respects that he's not retired already. He's done it all, right? He's a borderline Hall of Famer who won his Super Bowl, had a great career despite being on horrible teams in Detroit. What more is there to play for? And if it does go, you know, the wrong way, if it goes sideways, yeah, I could see them shutting that down. What about the opposite? Did you allude to best record?
Best record, I'm cooling my Jets a lot, actually, on a couple of teams. Just for full transparency, my process was pretty slow to start as NBA playoffs were cooking and, you know, Clay Tennis was firing through the months of April and May. And I was just kind of looking at macro stuff and, you know, on paper, the opportunity for the Jags to play a bunch of rookie quarterbacks was exciting. So I have a bunch of Jags futures, but my player level numbers for the Jags are not what I expected.
Not as good as you thought.
Not as good as I thought. As good as I thought. There's some issues and some weaknesses, and ultimately for them to surprise to the good, they're going to have to, you're going to have a major leap from Lawrence, which is possible. I think that's, you know, year three, year two under Doug Peterson, like the writing is on the wall that he should leap. But it still is a bit of a, it's still a bit of a reach. The team that I'm like genuinely surprised at how high my player rating is, and that I'm the most, I guess there's two teams that I'm the most over market in terms of like a team rating that's a composite of players and expected availability. One of them that does not have a chance to be the team with the most wins is the Houston Texans, but I like them for alt over consideration. That defense is actually kind of quietly very, very good. And on top, you know, combined with the upgrade in coaching, I think you might actually have like above 500 team in Houston this year. Even though they made some horrific decisions at the draft. But the team that kind of especially surprises me at the player level rating is the Pittsburgh Steelers, actually. Ooh. I like them 40 to 1 for most wins.
40 to 1 for most wins and alt over consideration as well, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
Houston and Pittsburgh. Drew, give us the Tour de France name one last time.
Jonas Vingegaard.
Wyatt, cross-check that with the last segment, see if he got the same name. Let's make sure. Thank you, Drew. Appreciate it. We'll talk Friday.
Hey, best luck, guys.
My man, Drew Dinsick, everybody. Coming back, Dan Weston on Wimbledon.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Attention, BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Well, here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. And once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, you'll both receive a $50 bonus. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi and Nevada. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. good, bad, funny, always encouraged. Nevada Azer. Hope Tom's prediction, talk about Tom Tango now. Hope Tom's prediction holds through about Stroman. I have Marcus Stroman for National League Cy Young at 150-1 pre-flop. Fire emoji. Once you put the fire emoji in, you know it's serious. That is a heck of a number. And again, for those who missed the first segment, was going through Tom Tango's sort of tried and true formula for Cy Young, where, again, last six years, meaning 12 different Cy Youngs, AL and NL, he's hit 7 of the 12 on the money. New Jersey, New York. I agree regarding Shohei, Cy Young, and MVP prospects. Baseball writers have changed how they view things, but not that heavily, at least not yet. Also on Strider, still could be residual remorse. So this is a great point. Still could be residual remorse from voters on the NL Rookie of the Year vote from last year. Can I get that formula again? It's a couple of things in there. One, yes, because he did not get Rookie of the Year. I failed to mention this. I meant to in the first segment. One of the other things that makes me want to back Strider as well as this point. They gave it to Michael Harris, his teammate, last year. It could have gone to Strider. There could be some sentiment among voters. Well, we kind of, you know, he got snubbed last year. Or even if it's not a snubbing, he didn't get it last year in terms of the Rookie of the Year. I should be even more inclined. Those people might have a sort of sentimental vote here. If all other things are equal, they're like, let's give this to Strider. Can I get the formula again? I don't know if you're being serious, but I'll give it to you. The formula from Tom Tango is, for his Cy Young points, innings pitched divided by 2 minus earned runs, plus strikeouts divided by 10 plus wins. That's it. All those stats I talked about in the first segment of the show, you don't care. Banshees of Atlantic City. Have we considered what happens to the AL MVP market if Shohei gets traded to the National League? That's another great point. With the Angels creeping into contention, is that still on the table? That would be the other way that Shohei would not win American League MVP. So injury would be the obvious way. The only other way would be some trade to the National League because, yes, in Major League Baseball, your stats restart at that point in the opposite league. Jesse Welch, Gil, I yelled, okay. I just burst out with that when you said Tango had Stroman winning the Cy Young reverberated through my business. That'd be outstanding. LOL, I guess he has a Stroman vote. And this is from Paul M. on hockey. Don't know if you covered yesterday regarding the NHL awards. Connor McDavid won the Hart by a landslide and would have won unanimously, but for one voter. The big joke is the Pittsburgh right voted him fifth. Does this not speak volumes again that some should not vote? It absolutely does. Had Connor McDavid a fifth. Whew. Let's talk some tennis. Dan Weston joins us. I don't know if Dano will be able to join us for the Beating the Book Wimbledon pod on Friday, so we wanted to sneak Dano in here for 5 good minutes on Wimbledon. He joins us from Tennis Ratings on Twitter and, of course, Betfair, all the other publications, Pinnacle Sports that he provides great tennis data for and great tennis insights. How you doing, Dano?
I am good, Gil. How are you?
It's great to see you. You going to be here next week? Yes, maybe?
I'm hoping so, yeah. Well, let's see.
Okay, maybe we'll have some in-studio during Wimbledon segments if you're here. Look forward to that.
You never know.
You never know. We'll see if he's here. All right, so here we are. The draw is on Friday, so we don't have the quarters yet. The men's side, just generally speaking, the men's side is very chalky. Novak Djokovic, the rightful favorite at minus 140, and only Carlos Alcaraz is in single digits to win outright. Women's side, much more up for grabs. Where do you stand on the ladder? Let's put it that way. Pre-draw.
Okay, so yeah, let's go women's to start with. I think that this is a great leveler in terms of the grass surface. Iga is certainly not as dominant on grass as she is on clay and also hard court, you would say, as well. So this is promising to be a really, really competitive tournament where I think you're probably looking at 10 to 12 players who are capable of winning this tournament. I had a chat with our good friend Drew yesterday, and he sort of had the same consensus, around 10 to 12 realistic contenders, I think, for this women's title.
Give us some names, because we've thrown out some. I'll give you some of the ones that, you know, I'm looking at my grass numbers. Petra Kvitova has just outstanding historical grass numbers. She's won this tournament twice. Veronika Kudermetova, yep. Yelena Ostapenko, Anja Jabeur. Would those be 4 of the 12?
Yeah, not far off at all, Gil. So you're looking at Kvitova, She's one of the form horses coming into this tournament. Obviously, she's been so effective on grass throughout her career, as you mentioned. And she won Berlin without dropping a set. So she's had a lot of market support. And Ostapenko, likewise, doing very well in Birmingham, picking up a title. And again, has that grass court pedigree and sort of medium-term decent data. Particularly on return, we always know with Ostapenko, her serve can sometimes be her undoing. But I think she's got a much better chance than a lot of those similar or slightly shorter prices as well. Ange Burr, definitely. I think the if it wasn't for perhaps some doubts that she maybe struggles at the pressure moments of tournaments, I think that she would be much closer in price to Rybakina and Sabalenka. And I also like the chances of Ekaterina Alexandrova, who is another player in great form right now, and a very much a quick surface specialist, which should suit her down to the ground in England. It's been generally pretty warm and dry here in England over the last month or so, and I think the conditions should be fairly well, definitely not slow, I would say. And she's obviously done very well in the warm-up events as well, semi-final Berlin and one in her Tosh&Bosch as well, and again, very strong grass court player traditionally. So those are some other options. And with the likes of Alexandrova, you're looking at, on Betfair at least, about 65 right now on her. Ostapenko, 32, which is, I think, a touch bigger than on your screen. And Kudermetova, you can also get at 60s as well, Gil.
And the draw will be key here because you'll be looking to make some quarter bets, I would imagine, based on how that shakes out. Would it shock you if Iga made a run here?
No, not at all. I mean, she's favorite, but I just don't see enough evidence of her being the top grass quarter in the field to be a shorter price than this. We always have to respect her. We know what she's done on all the other surfaces, where she's utterly dominant over the opposition. And I think that's a significant weighting of this current price on her favourite right now. As you say, about plus 380 for Iga right now, which is the same as Betfair. And I think we're just respecting her because she's world number one. She's got a lot to prove, similar to Alcaraz probably in the men's, actually.
Yeah, well, let's go to the men. By the way, Wimbledon begins Sunday night, Monday morning, stateside time. So it's a very quick grass season, and so we're from one major to the next in a span of just several weeks. If it's not Novak, if it's not Carlitos, who are some of them, when the draw comes out Friday, who are others that you would be looking at, perhaps, if it shakes out in their favor, to make a quarter play on? Let's put it that way.
Right, so the draw is going to be early in the morning, UK time, for I think it's either 9 or 10 a.m., which is about 1 hour, 2 a.m. in Vegas time. Obviously, we know that Djokovic is imperious at Wimbledon. He's won 7 titles, 4 in a row. Never seems to bother with his warm-up events, but comes out smelling of roses eventually as well. We're looking at some names. I'm looking at potentially the draw opening up for them and winning quarters. Would be likely a likely avenue. Andre Rublev, who's looks really big at about 120 on Betfair right now, as a sort of a trade maybe. Alex de Minaur, very strong grass quarter, gave Alcaraz a fantastic match in the Queen's final last week, where both of them had just the same amount of breakpoint chances, two apiece. He's 85 on Betfair. Sebastian Korda from the USA. Looking like a very, very promising player and continues to impress me whenever I see him. He's at 60s. And Francis Tiafoe, another American who's won a warm-up event, 95. And then can you really rule out Daniil Medvedev, who's so good normally in these quicker conditions but is on a real bad run of form right now? So he would be my sort of flyer as opposed to Alcaraz, I think.
Okay, interesting. I'm with you on de Minaur. Interesting you named a couple Americans, but not Taylor Fritz among them.
Well, he's had a really bad run-up to this tournament, hasn't he? Lost again today to McDonald, and he's 2-3 in these warm-up events that traditionally he does really well in.
Sasha Zverev, no love for Sasha?
For me, I think he's still far away below his peak.
Okay. Dan, hope you're here next week. We look forward to it. If not, safe travels wherever you're headed.
Thanks, Gil. See you soon.
Dan Weston, everybody, at Tennis Ratings on Twitter. You can follow his work at Betfair, also, of course, at Pinnacle, one of the global experts in tennis analytics, and also, by the way, in cricket analytics as well. We already did the Tour de France today. Why? We're not going to do cricket as well. Mike Pritchard on the NFL, what he provided for our betting guide next.